It's a Sunday afternoon in 1956. The garage door is open to the slow, golden light. A transistor radio crackles in the corner. A metal toolbox sits on a workbench, nicked and patient. A family gathers around a sputtering toaster, a cloth rag tucked into someone's back pocket, and the air smells faintly of motor oil and coffee. Nobody calls a store. Nobody opens a card. They pass a screwdriver, trade a guess, and begin to learn.
Good evening, and welcome to Financial Time Machine. I'm Megan Thomas. Tonight, we're stepping back into another chapter of everyday American life, exploring the money, culture, habits, and quiet routines that shaped previous generations. From grocery stores and family dinners to old advertisements, retirement dreams, and the way people once thought about debt, security, and success. This podcast is a journey through the forgotten rhythms of American life. Somewhere between nostalgia and history, there's usually a lesson. So settle in, slow down for a little while, and let's take a trip back in time. This is Financial Time Machine.
Today's story is about the do-it-yourself economy that kept families afloat. The Sundays spent in garages and basements, the mail-order parts that arrived in plain brown envelopes, the traveling repairmen who knew every brand name in town. It's about what was fixed, how people learned to fix it, and why fixing felt like more than a way to save a dollar.
Section 1. The tools, the manuals, and a different relationship with stuff. If you walk into a mid-century American home, you'd find a toolbox with tools worn to their handles, a battered copy of a repair manual on the shelf, and often a Sears parts catalog folded at a page of plumbing fittings. Repair manuals were not just instruction books, they were household heirlooms. They taught a kind of literacy, the language of nuts and bolts, the sound a motor makes when a bearing is failing, the way a seam will pucker when a sewing machine needs a new needle. Ah. Mail order parts made it possible to replace a tiny spring rather than an entire appliance. Neighborhoods had unofficial parts libraries, a neighbor who always had an extra belt for the lawnmower, an uncle who kept old knobs and screws in mason jars. That economy of shared resources kept cash under control, but it also reinforced a cultural idea that objects were worth tending, not just discarding.
Section 2. The rituals. Sunday fix-it sessions, traveling repairmen, and community know-how. Sunday afternoons were for projects. The weekly ritual might start with a cup of coffee, a glance at the task list, and the slow, communal focus of a household that saw repair as togetherness. Children learned to hand tools safely and to listen, really listen, as a parent described how a carburetor worked or why you shouldn't tighten a bolt too much. Meanwhile, traveling repairmen, the friendly, sometimes perpetually late pros, were a bridge between households and the burgeoning appliance economy. They knew when to fix and when to advise replacement. Their visits were social. Neighbors watched, offered parts, and learned from the questions asked. That knowledge spread person to person, and every repaired toaster or patched roof became a small lesson in self-reliance.
Section 3. Frugality, pride, and the dignity of saving. There's a myth that past generations fixed things only because they had to. The truth is more nuanced. Fixing saved money, yes, but it also created pride. Mending the family dress rather than buying new dress work was not just thrift. It was craftsmanship and continuity. Fixing an old car in the driveway was part of identity. It was how a father showed competence, how a teenager learned responsibility. Repair culture also carried an ethical dimension. Durability mattered. Products were expected to be serviceable. Manufacturers sold replacement parts. That expectation shaped purchasing decisions. You bought a product because you could imagine it being fixed, not because you planned to toss it in a landfill when it hiccuped.
A couple short examples to bring this home. My grandmother once kept a tiny tin of screws labeled from the 1947 Singer, a sewing machine that stitched together generations of clothing. She understood every creak of that machine. When the bobbin case jammed, she didn't panic. She eased it, cleaned it, and made a note for next time. That machine wasn't disposable. It was a member of the household. And in small towns, there were repair shops where you could drop off a vacuum cleaner and come back with it humming and cheaper than a new one. Tradespeople handed down not just skill, but stories, how a certain model always needed the same fix after 3 years, or how a particular part could be jury-rigged for a season. Those stories traveled to porches and schoolyards, shaping a community's practical knowledge.
Reflection. What did generations of repair teach us, and what have we traded away? Previous generations understood durability and the worth of slow care. That ethic meant fewer trips to big box stores, less impulse buying, and a habit of conserving resources. Skills were transferred across kitchen tables and tool benches. Shame-free thrift was a virtue, not an embarrassment. Today, we have conveniences that are glorious. Instant replacements, apps that summon services, products with incredible design. But along with those gains, many repair pathways have narrowed. Parts are harder to find, devices are sealed shut, and knowledge that used to be common is now siloed. We've gained speed and choice, and we've lost some of the quiet skills that knit households and neighborhoods together.
So why does this matter for how we think about money and life? Because repair is more than economics. It's an orientation. It teaches patience, problem solving, and a kind of respect for the objects that carry our days. Repair slows you down in a healthy way. It forces you to notice wear, to ask how things are made, and to value the hands that keep them working. If we reclaim even a fraction of that ethic, a communal toolbox, a willingness to learn a skill, a pause before replacing, we recover not just saved dollars, but stories and skills that anchor households across generations.
Closing thoughts. Perhaps we won't all become weekend machinists, and that's fine. But every now and then, when something breaks, consider sitting with it before you send it away. Ask a neighbor, consult an old manual, see if a tiny spring will do instead of a whole new machine. There is dignity in care. There is comfort in knowing how things work. There is a kind of love in tightening a screw rather than tossing the whole thing out. Dadgum, sometimes the smallest fixes keep whole worlds intact.
And that's where we'll leave our journey tonight. The past may look different through modern eyes, but sometimes, hidden inside old routines and forgotten traditions, we find pieces of ourselves we've been missing. Thank you for spending a little time traveling through history with me. Until next time, keep one foot in the past. Good night, and thanks for listening to Financial Time Machine.